Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin.
I'm HRN's Communications Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of the next episode of Meat & Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're fresh off our trip to Slow Food Nations in Denver, a festival that brought together advocates to discuss the future of food. And this week, we're bringing you a special episode inspired by the new Equity, Inclusion, and Justice Manifesto released by Slow Food USA.
If we're going to solve food security, we need to say these people have a right to good, healthful food. But we have to do that in a way that kind of insulates this system from the vagaries of the market.
Because when you're at a table with somebody, you recognize their humanity. And when somebody cooks for you and serves you food, in a way they're saying they care about your survival.
How can we put things into our own hands and have the people of Puerto Rico gain real access to healthy local foods?
Listen to Meat & Three this week for our highlights from Slow Food Nations, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. First, thank you to today's sponsor, Le Cordon Bleu, for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. Several of you have DM'd me over the past few months to tell me that you've signed up for classes at Le Cordon Bleu, in Paris in particular. The macaroon class seems to be very popular with the bomb squad. I also want to thank everyone who reached out to me after the Anthony Bourdain episode from a few weeks ago. I really appreciate your emails and DMs. You know, Anthony's death really rocked a lot of us to the core, and it's still hard to fathom what a big loss that was to all of us. So many of us deal with depression and dark days, and it's always good to reach out when you're having a hard time, even to a stranger. Some Cherry Bomb housekeeping. We have a sale going on. Check out cherrybomb.com for more. We have free shipping, 25% off all Bomb Squad merch, and more. We also just started shipping our brand new issue with Nigella Lawson on the cover. You can order a copy online or pick it up at your favorite shop, like Book Larder in Seattle. If you know a store that should sell Cherry Bomb, DM me. My goal is to have Cherry Bomb sold in every state in America, so you can help me get there. And thank you to everyone who bought a ticket to our Austin Future of Food event, which is officially sold out. I'll see all of you in a week. I'm excited to talk to Chef Kristen Kish, who just opened the Arlo Gray restaurant down there. Congratulations, Kristen. And to talk to all the other guests. We'll be recording the panel for a future episode of Radio Cherry Bomb. Special thanks to Kerrygold and Mossy Agricola Wines for sponsoring this stop of our tour. And then Cherry Bomb has something fun in the works, although pretty much everything we do is fun, right? On Tuesday, July 24th, we will debut CB Scoop, a digital issue dedicated to ice cream. All week long, we'll be celebrating our favorite brands, flavors, and female makers, so be sure to visit cherrybomb.com and check us out on Instagram for bonus content. Also, my coffee shop, Smith Canteen, will debut a special Cherry Bomb ice cream sandwich. I'm very excited. If you're going to be in Brooklyn from July 24th through 31st, stop by and try one. See what the team at Smith Canteen has going on. And if you love ice cream as much as I do, you probably put it on your Instagram. You can tag us, hashtag CBScoop, and let us see what you're up to and what your ice cream adventures are this summer. Now, let's talk about today's guests. Everyone always asks me what my favorite restaurants are, especially in New York, since I live here. One of my absolute favorites is a charming Japanese restaurant in the NoHo neighborhood on Bleecker Street called Besso. The owner is Maiko Kayogoku, and the executive chef is Emily Yuen. They're the daughters of immigrants and the daughters of chefs, so it's no surprise they got into the restaurant business. Maiko's family had a Japanese restaurant on the Upper West Side for 30 years, and Emily, who hails from Vancouver, knew she wanted to be a chef from an early age and worked in London, Melbourne, and Singapore. They joined me in the studio in the spring, right around our Jubilee conference, and I'm so happy to share our conversation. If you're coming to New York, please go visit Besso and tell them Cherry Bomb sent you. You'll have a wonderful time, and maybe I'll see you there. Enjoy today's show. Maiko Kayogoku and Emily Yuen, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having us.
It's a thrill, Emily. I'm glad you're here too, right before service. You're going to dash out of here, get on the subway, and go make dinner for everybody.
It's okay. We have a great team.
You do have a great team, and I know that because I have sat at your bar and watched everybody cook.
Yes.
And I have sat in your dining room, and I absolutely love Besso. And I just have to say congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It's hard in New York, but you two have created a really beautiful, special space.
Thank you.
So let's talk about how it came to be. How did you two meet?
We met at Danielle Balud's restaurant, Balud Sud. I was running the private dining, and Emily was a sous chef. And Emily was working for Danielle a little longer than me.
Mm-hmm. In Singapore as well. I worked for him for 3 years, from line cook to executive sous chef. And then he asked me to transfer to New York. And it was perfect.
Now, are you from Singapore?
No, I'm from Vancouver, Canada.
How did you wind up in Singapore?
I was living in London, and I wanted... My visa was ending, and I just wanted to live in Asia. And Singapore seemed very natural because everyone speaks English, and there was a lot of expats. So, and then, yeah.
Emily's actually worked in a lot of different countries.
Yeah, I know you just mentioned Vancouver, London, Singapore. You got around.
And I used to live in and work in Melbourne as well in Australia.
Wow. You look very young. So to hear that you worked in all those places is astounding.
Asian genes.
Yeah. Forever young. It's true.
How did you get into cooking?
It was just something I was interested in home economics in high school. And I just applied for cooking school. And then after that, it was just like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
How did you get up the nerve to travel to so many places?
I met somebody, he was the pastry chef for Marco Pierwaye in London, and he really just inspired me through his stories of like living elsewhere, and he was just like, I've got a friend, do you want to go? I'm like, okay.
What was Melbourne like?
It's very similar to Vancouver. It's like kind of a San Francisco vibe and a big coffee culture. But there was a chef I wanted to work for, and he was doing modern French cooking. And it was really the restaurant that drove me to want to move to Melbourne. And I got the cookbook, and I just went there after.
Maiko, you have a family background in
food.
Tell me about your family's restaurant.
So my father owned a restaurant for about 30 years on the Upper West Side. It was called Rikyu. And it was a sushi restaurant. It was one of the first on that part of Manhattan. I grew up kind of watching my dad work in the kitchen and help out where I could. We would, my sister and I would be at the Columbus Street Fair every year trying to sell the last sushi rolls. I think I've always... been around restaurants and chefs and food. And my mother was didn't really help out at the restaurant, but she was a flower arranger, and she would do all the decor and the flower arranging at the restaurant, and she cooked at home. So I grew up surrounded in that environment.
So you didn't, it's so tough running a restaurant. You weren't scared off?
I was. I mean, and especially my dad, who was like, restaurants are not where girls should be. And so he was very much against me going into restaurants. But in college, I would be helping him, or would be a hostess at a restaurant. I just always ended up back at a restaurant after I quit a job or and then one time I was working for Murakami, for Takashi Murakami, and left and ended up working at a local restaurant I had been a
host
at.
We should tell people who Murakami is for those who are like, what restaurant did he run?
Takashi Murakami is a
contemporary. He did not run a restaurant.
Yeah. Takashi Murakami is a contemporary artist, and I was working for him for, a year and a half or so.
That must have been fascinating.
That was an amazing, surreal time in my life.
I mean, he's one of the most famous artists on the planet.
I had wanted to work for a Japanese company and utilize some of my skills in, at the time I was coming out of a publishing job and licensing. I mean, I've done a lot of different things, but I was working with him, and he is brilliant but very demanding, and I learned a lot from him. But when I left, I just ended up back at a restaurant again. I mean, on some level, my dad also is very proud that I've kind of followed in his footsteps. So,
Now, interestingly, though, you've talked about how the restaurant is really a reflection of your mom.
Yeah, it is. It is. My mother passed away when I was 18. So it's really an homage to the food I grew up eating, memories of her. But also, she is from Akita in the north part of Japan, and I never lived in Japan, but she really felt like we needed to eat Japanese food at home, and she would really work hard to teach us about the traditions behind some of the dishes. So we spent a lot of time cooking together growing up.
What were some of the things she would make?
One of them is a damago nabe that we actually have at the restaurant right now, and it's a seasonal kind of mochi rice ball stew, and many families in Japan, they have their own recipe, but you spend time pounding the rice and making the mochi balls. And so, yeah, we would make a lot of those types of dishes.
What else did she make?
She also made like udon dishes, which we also do. There's an inaniwa udon that's very famous from Akita, which is like a little silkier, a little thinner. And you pair it with all different kinds of side dishes. But at the restaurant, we do it with tempura, and we use seasonal vegetables.
Now, did you appreciate that as a child, or were you like, I just want peanut butter and jelly?
Growing up, a lot of times I would bring bentos, like packed lunches to school. And I remember being so embarrassed because my mom would make cucumber rolls. And I thought it was so stereotypical, like the Japanese girl bringing sushi rolls. But everyone loved it. And meanwhile, I'm like jealous of my friend's bologna sandwich. So, but later in life, I definitely appreciated it. And a lot of my own interests in food came from trying to recreate her dishes and in adult life. So, I would spend a lot of time looking through cookbooks and watching the Food Network, watching Japanese cooking shows, and trying to kind of recapture some of the flavors that I remember.
Now, Emily, how about you? Who did the cooking when you were little? What was cooked?
My dad cooked, and he worked as a chef, but it was never like something that my parents wanted me to go into. So I wouldn't say I had like a much of a food background. We just like cooked very simply, my parents they were immigrants, and so they definitely didn't want me to go into cooking. They would continuously ask me like, oh, when are you going back to school? But they're very supportive now that I've after I decided this is what I want to do.
So it's so interesting that you both had dads who are chefs.
Yeah. But my dad did like everything from like janitorial work to like chefing to like, I don't know, like working in hotels, cleaning and all that. So, yeah.
I mean, for our parents, I think, I'm speaking for both of us, but for my dad, it was like out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's one of the reasons that he really didn't want me to go into restaurants, because for him, there was just no other choice. He actually worked at different, like a ramen shop and a sushi restaurant, and he used to play rugby in college, and his coach was this wealthy entrepreneur who helped open the first Japanese restaurant in Spain, in Madrid, and he asked my dad to go and help open the restaurant. That was his first journey outside of Japan, but he never looked back and just went on to live in the U.S., so.
Emily, you were nodding. Similar things for your dad?
No. He never traveled.
No. Just about, just when Maiko said that
out of necessity.
It was out of necessity that her dad did that.
Definitely. I think, any, like, immigrant parents moving into, like, you know, North America, I think it is, like, you know, you kind of don't have the same, like, credentials that you did before. I mean, my dad was, like, a pig farmer, and, like, my mom was, like, a rice, farmer as well. So, like, it was, they didn't have, like, the skills. So when they came to America or, like, North America, they really wanted to give us a good life. And it was just, like, anything to make money. And, you know, you really appreciate that growing up and seeing their struggles. So
where did you mentioned that your dad's Chinese. Where did your parents come from?
They came from mainland China. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they met, and then they actually wanted to have more than one kid. And I'm the second kid. So, they wanted to move to North America to have another kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now China doesn't have that rule anymore.
I know.
Which is so crazy.
I know.
I remember the first time I went to China, I went to Beijing, and I was working for Lancome at the time, and we were doing a project and did shoots with all the different fashion magazines at the time. So it was a lot of young people, because fashion wasn't really, the whole fashion media thing wasn't a thing like it had mm-hmm. been in America. It was mm-hmm. kind of a new industry over there. And we shot with Vogue China and all these other people, and everyone was an only child.
Yeah.
And I'd read about it for years, but until you meet 20 different people and they're all only children, and I'm one of five. So for me, it was definitely fascinating from a cultural perspective.
Yeah, like my cousins are like only childs, so it's it's definitely real.
Now, we should talk about the food at Besso, and I've read it described as modern Japanese comfort food. Is that a fair description?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Mm-hmm. The food is based on dishes that I grew up with, but Emily and I collaborate on all of the dishes, and we both have a big love of Mediterranean flavors and just seasonal ingredients, and we try to incorporate that as much as possible, which in some ways is a very Japanese philosophy too, to try mm-hmm. to use what's around you and use as much seasonal local produce as possible.
Now, Emily, how is it for you cooking Japanese food? Is this a whole new world for
you? It is. I mean, it is and it isn't, because I think I'm surprised at, like, because my background is all French, and I think I'm surprised at, like, certain techniques that are similar. But I think it's really fun, because I'm like, I mean, that's the reason, one of the reasons why I wanted to go into cooking in the first place. You, like, never stop learning. So there's always something new, and I think it's so exciting. Like, we collaborate on all the dishes together, and we always think about, like, it's really fun just to learn how to, like, elevate the dishes. And, right?
Yeah.
So tell me some things you can never take off the menu at Besso.
I think the karaage is there to stay. It's our Japanese-style fried chicken. That one is kind of a crowd pleaser and familiar but not familiar. And I think that's what, I mean, the most successful dishes on the menu are the ones that are based on a dish that's traditional, but then it's also super familiar in another sense. So I think the grilled romaine also.
Oh, the grilled romaine is so good.
It's been on our menu since the opening, and everyone's like, do not ever take it off. So, yeah. So far it's stayed.
What do you love cooking?
Sorry, what do I love cooking?
What do you love cooking at Peso?
I'm really into dashi right now. So, and like, I think dashi is something that, you know, like you, it's not, there's no recipe. It's like all taste. And I think it's like something that takes years and years to master. And I think that's for like a Japanese restaurant, the base of everything, like the chicken stock for a French restaurant. So I think I'm really into that right now.
Talk people through what's in dashi.
Oh, so
for those who don't know.
Okay, so dashi is typically kombu, which is a seaweed, niboshi, which is anchovy that's dried, and depending on if you're making it like a bonito dashi, then like bonito flakes, which is a type of tuna that is dried and smoked and flaked. So, yeah.
But there's different combinations of it. And we have a vegan version that we do with kombu kelp and shiitake mushrooms. But it's, I mean, a lot of the staple ingredients in Japanese cuisine is very personal. And very kind of unique home to home or kitchen to kitchen. So dashi could be very bonito heavy in one family, and then in another household it might be really light and, you know, cleaner tasting. So it all depends.
I had something for the first time last week. We were there on the night of the snowstorm, as yes. You know, and it was the most perfect place to be that night. And we really wanted everything that was on the menu because it was just that kind of evening. And I always order the pickles when I come. You have those that fantastic plate of house-made pickles. And it was a smoky pickle, and it blew our minds. What was that pickle?
It's called, in Japanese, it's called iburigakko, but it is smoked daikon. That's been pickled and then smoked. And it's actually from Akita. I think the traditional process takes months and months. But we actually smoke it in applewood chips. And, I mean, Emily could talk about the process a little more.
Well, I'd like to talk about how sometimes Maiko is, like, I think it's hilarious because like, she doesn't have a cooking background, she'll be like, okay, so can we make this? And I'm like, doesn't it take months and months of like smoking and this like old Japanese lady is like, you know, up all hours of night fanning the fire to smoke the pickles? And so, yeah. And then so we like, she has these ideas and I think it's really great because she doesn't have a cooking background and then we'll just like figure out how to do it. So I, in a lot of ways, I'm just like, what? We can't do this? And then we figured out a way, and it's like, and I think that's one of the things with that pickle, really funny enough, is like there's one of our cooks, he was smoking the pickles and he burnt them. And it was in, and when he like, he actually forgot about them and he, and that's how the color came to like the pickles.
Those pickles have a brown exterior and then it's, you know, yellow on the inside. And so, I mean, it definitely looks like it could even be like a piece of meat or something.
Yeah.
Emily and I definitely have this, very unique relationship that's very symbiotic in that, I mean, she's like making, you know, my food memory dreams come true.
And you have a small space and it's an open kitchen.
Yes.
I'm guessing you have somewhere, is there somewhere bigger behind the scenes that we can't see?
Yeah, there is like a little, not too much bigger, but there is a prep area downstairs and we have a bigger fridge to like store everything. So there's a lot of exercising up and down the stairs.
It's true.
But you're doing all your magic right out in front of everybody every night.
The cooking is at the open kitchen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that pressure having everybody be able to watch you?
I feel like it forces you to kind of think about your actions more and like, you know, to be neater and like to kind of you're almost on display. So I think it forces all the cooks to be better.
I mean, every night for pre-shift, we're like right before we open the doors, we're like, it's showtime because you are on display whether you're in the kitchen or out in the dining room. So
let's talk about the physical space because it's a very pretty restaurant in a very minimalist way. What was the inspiration?
Well, besso means, in Japanese, besso means home away from home or holiday villa. So that was the inspiration behind the dining room space. You know, I wanted to make people feel like they were going into someone's home. And a lot of it, I mean, I also just enjoy kind of minimalist design. So it was a balance of trying to keep it minimal, but then also really homey and inviting. So there's just different elements that are, I think, evoke a certain kind of homey atmosphere. There's like a lantern in the middle, and it's like minimalist, but also Asian inspired. And there's different elements that are kind of based in nature, like our chopstick rests are our stones and
from Montauk
in the Rockaways.
Keeping it local.
Exactly.
So not keeping it local, you went to Japan recently.
I did.
How was that?
Oh my gosh, it was so great. I went for about 2 weeks and explored different parts I'd never been to. Also visited my 95-year-old grandmother, so that was really nice.
How's your grandmother doing?
She's doing well. She's definitely, like, I mean, I'm always surprised by how much of an appetite she has. She's in a nursing home now, but she was complaining about the portions and how she wishes they could give her more food. So, yeah.
What does she think about the fact that you own a restaurant?
Oh, she's very proud of me. I mean, like, she's feels like it's also, you know, her son had owned a restaurant, and so she's definitely surprised that I was taking that same path, but she's very proud. Yeah.
And have you been to Japan yet, Emily?
I have not, but we tried to go together, but we just couldn't.
Not right now. I mean, we're still so new.
Yeah.
Was that hard for you to leave the restaurant for 2 weeks?
Very hard.
Because you've been there every time I'm at your restaurant, you're at, and I don't tell you I'm coming, so it's not like, you're like, let me go say hi to Carrie. You are there.
Right.
Working.
Well, I mean, this time we actually had a friend who opened the restaurant with us come back from San Francisco. She moved to San Francisco, but I asked her to come back to help us. So it's definitely, mm-hmm. I mean, it was hard, but, you know, I mean, everyone is so capable and, you know, Emily was there as well. And hopefully, you know, next time we can go together and, you know.
Yeah.
I'm dying to go to Japan. Aren't you?
Yeah. Ugh. It's just like, I just want to see everything that we talk about. And like, I think just, it's just a whole new, it's just an experience. I mean, when we've been talking about like, you know, Japan, Japanese food for like, you know, a long time. So I just want to like live it and like eat it and yeah, eat it pretty much.
What are some of the things you've done to educate yourself about Japanese cuisine?
Well, I've worked with her dad very closely before the restaurant opened, and he still comes to the restaurant and helps out, especially if I'm shorthanded. So he'll come still. And but I've staged at Kujitsu, which is I think one Michelin star vegan restaurant near Grand Central. And then I've also staged with 108. It's in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. And we talk about it like every day.
I mean, we used to go out a lot to different restaurants, mm-hmm. try out the food. Before we opened, Emily would be over at my dad's house every day, and we'd be cooking together and exploring different ingredients. And so it was a good, I would say, 6 months of cooking together and mm-hmm. dining out all the time.
Yeah, we still eat out a lot.
That's true.
I'm glad to hear you have the time to do that. That's good.
Well, it's like at midnight.
Yeah.
So what has been the biggest surprise about having your own restaurant?
Oh, man. It's just so many unforeseen, I don't know, incidents, but also really amazing opportunities to share this type of cuisine with people. And the responses has been overwhelming. I mean, you know, I'm sure you're familiar as well, but owning a restaurant is so difficult and it's just so many challenges. But the rewards are great too. And, you know, developing a customer base, like regulars, is super rewarding. And we've gotten to know our neighborhood, and people are, you know, very responsive to the food. They're always providing opinions, or some neighbors even help us with ingredients. Like there was one neighbor who was donating his shiso from his vegetable garden. And that's always been a dream, to be part of a larger community and to create a neighborhood atmosphere.
Before I let you go, we have to talk about dessert. We didn't talk about that, and I love all your desserts. You sent this wonderful little, we ordered it because it was perfect. There were three of us, and it was, it came in threes. The little chocolate kiss mochi dessert. Tell us about that.
So it's we call it Japanese kisses, and it is a mochi dessert where there's a red bean chocolate ganache inside, and it's wrapped in mochi crepe, and there's strawberry dust on top, which is freeze-dried strawberries that we make into powder form.
What are some of the other desserts?
We recently just started doing, we have a yuzu panna cotta with a cassis granita that we have on special right now. We've done kakigori, and we've done ice creams from the beginning. So I love ice creams.
Emily makes great ice creams.
Can we expect more of that this spring and summer?
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, good reason for me to come back very soon. I would love to keep you here forever and talk to you, but you two have a restaurant to run. And you actually literally have to run back to the restaurant and get it open for tonight's guests. But people totally dig what you're doing at Besso. I know it's tacky to name drop celebrities who come into your own restaurant, so I'll name drop for you. But Jonah Hill was there the whole night. He was like us. You couldn't get rid of him.
I know he was like lounging there for
quite
a bit. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think he lives in the neighborhood, and there's been
Well, you two are amazing. I just can't wait to see how Besso continues to grow and develop, and your careers continue to grow and develop, because you two are great. So
thank you so much.
Maiko, Emily, thank you so much for being on Radio Cherry Bomb. You two are the bomb.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Don't forget to pick up the latest issue of Cherry Bomb magazine, hitting stores and mailboxes now. I forgot to mention that Maiko wrote a story for the new issue. She recalls a very special night at a tiny restaurant in Kyoto on her recent trip to Japan. You can order the magazine at cherrybomb.com or stop by shops like Seattle's Book Larder, which is such a local treasure. Go visit if you live in Seattle. And if you're in New York, visit Besso. You'll love the food, and you'll probably spot Maiko and Emily there. Be sure to say hi. Thank you again to our sponsor, Le Cordon Bleu. Visit cordonbleu.edu to learn more about the legendary culinary school and all the programming and classes they have available. Thank you to Dave Tatasciore, DJ Dave, our engineer, and to Tra-La-La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. Thank you for listening, everybody. You're the bomb. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.